Welcome to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Maybe you've been listening for a while, or this is your first episode. If you like what you hear, would you do us a favor by rating and reviewing us on iTunes? This is a fantastic way to tell us you enjoy what we are creating. Also, if you want more MTSS resources, sign up for our weekly newsletter using the link in our show notes and check out our website for all the blogs and guides you would ever need about MTSS. I'm so excited to introduce to you Mitch Weathers, who is the author of the book we're talking about today. And he is the founder of Organized Binder, which is basically a tier one solution for executive functioning. And so I'm so excited to hear from him. He is a former educator, and now he is an author and speaker, and he provides resources to educators like you to help you support your students with executive functioning. Mitch, I'm just going to dive in. The first question is, what is executive functioning?
No.
That's a good way to put it.
No, but yeah. So there are academic sounding definitions when it comes to executive functioning. The way and really what these are, these cognitive processes that do allow us to, you know, manage our time, juggle tasks, stay focused. And it really manifests as what most of the literature and research would say is manifesting in goal-oriented behavior. So some of that is associated, of course. Well, if I'm completely tragically disorganized, it's hard to stay focused and accomplish my goal. Same thing with time management, self-regulation, all of this. Yeah, there's two kind of domains, if you will. There's the core executive functioning, which is working memory, something called inhibition, and cognitive flexibility. And we'll probably get into what those are. And the reason that it's kind of separated out core executive functioning and then higher order executive functioning. The higher order, so my first book, if you look at the subtitle, is grades 3 through 12. All of that work is focused on quote unquote higher order executive functioning. Now, that does not mean that they are these two domains. They're not mutually exclusive. They, of course, relate to one another. But the core executive functions for all of the younger educators of younger students on the call. That's where this core executive functioning work is ideally happening, because it lays the foundation for the higher order. So thinking of it in two ways, core and higher order, put it all together, I like to use one word, and that word is studentness. And the reason, and that's not my expression or phrase or term, a school that we've worked with for quite a few years now with my Organized Binder team, they actually reached out to us and they were doing great work programming wise, but they just felt like, again, their own words, they're like, something's missing. And we are on a mission collectively to develop this sense of studentness in our students. And that's, you know, if you, and this was a high school, by the way, and if you are working with students and you're in the older grades, secondary level, say middle school, and you're recognizing that maybe my students don't have that foundation, it's not all hopeless. It's just saying if we could be strategic, we would do that core EF work in the younger grades. But they can be improved, especially the higher order executive functioning skills can be improved at any age. The research is clear on that. But repetition, practice with them, doing them is key. So this idea of studentness, the reason I borrowed that term from this school is I love just having educators stop and think about, like, what do you envision when you picture a student with this sense of this studentness? And for me, that's like I see a kiddo with some agency in their learning. They know how to do school. Right, they're moving from being kind of a passive object, like experience in the classroom. So I remember this from my own schooling years, as I was there and I wanted to participate, and it was like, it felt like my education and my schooling was going on all around me. And I wanted to be an active subject, but I was very much experiencing it as a passive object. I didn't have a sense of studentness. And that studentness, that doing school, that's where these executive functioning skills come in. And it's really interesting because for students sitting in a room that might be feeling that in a classroom, we can't forget that they're looking around and I remember this being like, but other people seem to know how to do it. How come they know how to do it? Or at least they seem like they know how to do it. And I didn't have that confidence or that agency. So I like to boil it all down, everything I just said, into this idea of studentness and what does that look like for your learners in your environment and your grade level, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, and I think that kind of leads to this quote from your book is that it's unfair to expect students to thrive in new learning environments, those full of unspoken expectations, without equipping them with the skills and habits they will need to succeed. And I think you're talking some of the studentness that you talk about is some of those unspoken expectations of school. So if students missed that, like if they, had a year where they were absent a lot or were sick or there's some disruption in their learning.
Do you mean like a global pandemic, maybe?
Yeah, maybe that's also could be it. And so I think that that's something that is really to me, I think about executive functioning of just the students that feel passive. It's like they're like, I missed something. What did I miss that how to do this? And sort of like how to do school. I hear that phrase a lot. Talked about is like how to do school. And some of it is those skills that students need, such as time management, organization. I don't know if we ever like talked about being organized as like I think back to my own schooling is like, where did I learn that? And I think through the teachers who had binders in their classroom and we put things in sections of the binder. And like some of those things I learned along the way, I was like, oh, that's where I gathered how to do that. So if we don't ever like model that skill for students, it's really hard. So I guess my question is, what do you think are some of those unspoken expectations?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, we have our curriculum at any level, pre-K all the way up through higher ed, right? There's a curriculum, but make no mistake, there's a hidden curriculum that students must understand if they're going to be successful, in the same way that they need to understand the content in the curriculum. And it really is this unspoken, unmentioned kind of set of skills or habits or expectations, or another word, and this is a word we have to really check ourselves as teachers or educators, is the assumptions. As soon as we make an assumption about what we think students can do without being sure of that, right, then you're it's a hidden curriculum. And so what Lisa Delput says in her book, Other People's Children, I love how she frames it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but that which is implicit in the classroom and we need to make explicit, like the things that are implied, the assumptions that are being made, have to constantly, it's so easy to do, right? And to think, like me as a ninth grade, like high school teacher, the assumption, you should know how to do this. You should, I saw in the note taking in there, like you should know how to take notes already, or you should know how to manage your time. You should remember that we had homework and that you should know how to organize yourself because you're in 10th grade or whatever it might be. But to your point, well, if I haven't ever been explicitly taught these, and may and it's all oftentimes comes down to my lived experience. Maybe I have, maybe I haven't. Well, I can't just leave it up to chance. I need to there's a great quote that, we need to now teach skills formerly learned by students on their own. And if the and I don't want to attribute everything to the pandemic because there's more going on with our young people in a rapidly evolving and changing world. But there's no doubt that the interruptions from the COVID-19 pandemic had an impact, and it left an imprint differently depending on your age and experience. And that is just true. And what we're collectively seeing is a increased dysregulation or behaviors that might be attributed to executive dysfunction as compared to past. And I really mean this, Larissa. I have the privilege of talking to educators all over the world, all over the US, everywhere. And they're seeing like an increase, almost like a scratching my head, like, wow, I'm in fifth grade and I'm seeing these behaviors that I haven't, seen this much of them before. And these executive functioning skills can really help with that.
So when you talk about executive dysfunction, can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, if you were to, if you think of, I'll just list some quote unquote higher order executive functioning skills, and you've already is like organization. A sign of executive dysfunction might be the inability to get and stay organized. And I frame it through this idea of studentness. I'm looking for these the behaviors. Executive functions are these cognitive processes that we can point to where they're it's happening in the brain. We know that. But for the teacher, this has to be practical work. These have to be strategies I can implement in the class. And so signs of executive dysfunction would be if I'm, and we'll get into what I call the three keys for supporting executive functions, but if I'm in an environment where these are routinely being supported and I'm getting practice with these skills over time, if signs of executive dysfunction are persistent, whether that be organization, time management, self-regulated, self-monitoring behavior. We could go on and on and on about what that would look like, but if we can create spaces or learning environments where we can spot signs of executive dysfunction, it's not a deficit lens. It's not, oh, this is what this kid doesn't have, he can't do it. It's more of saying, ah, okay, now how do we address that? How do we start to shape the environment in ways that lead to better executive functioning? So, yeah, that when I think of executive dysfunction, I'm looking for behaviors that I can spot and we can address. And this is all meant, if you've read the first book, and hopefully you'll pick up the second one, this work, what I'm passionate about is this is tier one. And oftentimes when we look at MTSS, which I know is near and dear to your heart, Larissa, oftentimes executive functioning work, and it's not a bad thing, is tier two, tier three. Think of our special ed departments, counselor support, and that's a good thing. But executive functioning ideally should be a universal tier one MTSS or MLSS for any of our New Mexico friends. And the reason I'm passionate about that is ideally a universal tier one program or resource will help identify areas of need. That's those behaviors, right? And actually address them or mitigate them in the tier one space. And if we can design systems, implement programming in that way, then if something is persistent, that's a great thing. I used to say early on, I was like, that's like an immediate red flag. Like, what's going on here? And now I have a more authentic tier two or even tier three intervention for that kiddo or with that kiddo. But it's all meant to be happening in that tier one space. And a good friend of mine and others, I think you all at Branching Mind use this phrase too, that you can't tier two yourself out of a tier one problem. But point to your tier one. That's what I, and not in like some, gotcha way, but I oftentimes when having the privilege of collaborating with or working with districts or schools, it's like, hey, let's start there. Point to your tier one. And oftentimes it's harder to do than pointing to your tier two or tier three.
Well, and I think there is this. It's always that assumption of, oh, they covered that in the year before. Like I think this is making me think through my teaching years. I would be like, well, they're supposed to cover that in sixth grade. So in seventh grade, I'm going to start here. And then slowly realizing, oh, there's no guarantee that every sixth grade classroom had the same writing instruction or the same instruction on this. And so in the same way, you have to, at the tier one level, really establish where are we starting? Where is everybody starting? And can we get everyone on the same page? And I think I love in your book, you talk a lot about this as far as sort of a system level work. It's not just about one teacher in a classroom or, but the group or the power of that collective work. And the one comment I thought was really important to address was each teacher's expectations differing. And so you have to really spend that time early in the year to clarify expectations. as class behavior, what's looks like to be successful. And I think that that, like, we're talking about tier one, I think that should be school wide, like should have some of those policies that are the same everywhere. To me, I think about students coming into middle school, and some of the most confusing part for them is they have seven different teachers expecting things to be organized in seven different ways, or, you know, participation looks different in seven different ways. Yeah.
And you mentioned, if I can piggyback on that, the middle school. I tell a story as well. I was speaking at a district-wide symposium, and I got, it was housed at a middle school, and they had this big auditorium, and I was walking into the auditorium, and I walked by the hallway or whatever. I saw the bell schedule on the wall, and I literally stopped, and I was like, I can't be seeing that right. And I double take read it, and I'm like, okay. And I went into the auditorium. Before I started, I was just kind of asked everybody, like, does anybody teach here? Did I see that right? Do you guys actually have 10 class periods a day? And they were like, yeah. And lunch. So, and it was a 6, 7, 8 middle school. And we were talking about, of course, executive functioning. And part of what I advocate for, you were saying collective teacher efficacy, which is not just a good idea. It is absolutely research grounded and proven to be one of the most powerful strategies to help students be successful. But as you mentioned, at a middle school, we're so siloed by definition. Like, I teach 6th grade English, you teach 8th grade ELA, you're in a different part of campus, the specials or electives are here. And but we're siloed geographically speaking, subject area wise, and it's not necessarily to say that's a bad thing. But with the research is saying collective efficacy, doing stuff, doing it together, helps students be successful. Well, what can you get collective about? Well, you can get collective about executive functioning. If it's really about clarity, modeling, and routine, which is what's framed in the book, we can all implement the same beginning routine. And it might mean that we all adjust just slightly, but if we do that for the sake of students, then if I'm at that middle school, and this is why I challenged that district, but specifically that school, and in kind of a fun way, because I know teachers can't change the bell schedule or do anything, but I said, think about it. First of all, if you're 6, 7, 8, and I'm just made the quantum leap to middle school, and look at the data, right? These transitions to middle school and then middle school to high school and even to college can be problematic for a lot of our learners, right? So I'm already making the from 5th grade to 6th grade, which is scary or at least anxiety producing for most, right? Because there's big kids, there's lockers, I got to go to all this. But more importantly, every year prior to this, most likely I had one teacher. I was in a self-contained environment. A teacher got to know me, my family, loved on me, right? Hopefully. So I've made this quantum leap. Well, now I'm navigating all that and I'm going to 10 different places, 10 different things I'm learning, of course, 10 different teachers, 10 different expectations or routines, if any, right? So I've just come from math and now I'm in English, and what am I supposed to, this class starts this way, this expectation and all that difference. So what's happening is the students are spending a significant amount of their working memory capacity. There's a cognitive load to that. And working memory is the engine for learning, and it's finite. So the more we can not tax it, if we can reduce extraneous load, they have more capacity to focus on the things we're trying to learn. And that capacity, that working memory capacity, we have to protect it, right? And that's what it's also related to, my ability to self-manage, self-regulate, stay on task. So we start looking at extraneous load related to classroom management issues, engagement. It's a really interesting conversation. But if we zoom out of that middle school, what I had them think about, I said, well, what if you all implemented the same routine? And all I mean by that, this is how we begin. This is how we transition. This is how we organize ourselves. This is how, like, and it just takes a few moments. All of a sudden, now I'm getting practice. Let's just stick with organization, Larissa. I'm getting practice learning to get and stay organized in different contexts. That's powerful. And it's not that hard to do. So this idea of being collective, there's certain things, like imagine how all those mental calories I'm using just navigating as a 6th grader. Now take my kiddos. Oh, and I'm translating everything I'm reading and everything I'm hearing. Or whatever it might be, it's just, it can get in the way of learning, and it can, back to the behaviors, it can manifest in off task dysregulated behaviors in the classroom, when in fact, it might just be that we're taxing cognitive or working memory, and it's we could address that with executive functioning.
First of all, thank you, Mitch, for being here with us.
I wish we had like two more hours. This is a fun conversation.
I just hope that this is giving you guys some things to think about. Mitch's book is a great resource. This is actually helpful for me as a person in general, not just a teacher. And I told Mitch that I shared this with a lot of my own colleagues, former colleagues and educators that I know, because it is a really fantastic book and great, has a lot of great resources in it.
This was fun, Marissa. Thanks for being here, everybody.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.